Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents six. The Drive with the Top Six at six.
How about six? Six is good.
Chad Brown and Tyler, story number one. Well, not good for the Nuggets.
Michael Porter Jr. Aiden goes on and it's stolen. Here comes Booker with the steal. The other way, transition points for the Phoenix Suns.
Very productive. I saw one team that wanted to be here and play with a purpose and urgency, and one team that did not want to be here and play with no urgency, and that's why we got our ass kicked.
Chad, what next?
Man, you lost by 25. You lost by 17. Try to score as many points as the other team. Try to keep it relatively close. For Michael Malone, you know, I understand the frustration. I don't think calling the players out in the way that he did was the best way to go about it. But sometimes, you know, the other team's better. Sometimes the Rabbits got the gun. And for the Nuggets, with the struggles with the injuries this year, I think it's finally coming to an end.
Ring of Kevin.
Just last week, James Verlat wrote an article saying if the Avs can win this series, they deserve to be mentioned and talked about as one of the greatest Colorado sports teams ever. What's happened since last week?
Man, that's such a good question. I don't really know. I'm at game one, and yeah, okay, they played Robin Leonard instead of Fleury. I think I don't know my name. It's good. No. And you thought, all right, this is the way this is going to go. Then they won a game they probably shouldn't have won, but they won it. Then they're up, you know, 2-0 in game five, and you think, okay. There have been so many moments where you just think, oh, well, this is, oh, wait, no. This is it. No, wait, no. Tonight is an incredibly defining moment in the franchise's history. Because you just don't get opportunities like this very often. Chad, sometimes you can, by hook or by crook, find your way in the second round of the playoffs. And I get it. This is a weird second round because it's all crazily restructured because of COVID reasons. So you may really be playing the Stanley Cup Finals, Chad, like right now. These may be the two best teams. Arguably, they are. How did they get here? I think maybe that's just it. Maybe you're just playing the next best team in the NHL, and when things are so even, maybe it is a bad bounce of the puck one way or the other. Maybe it's just luck. But if you want luck to go on your side, then you got to do something about it. It's really, really hard to define what's going on here with the Avalanche from my perspective.
Yeah, I unfortunately, I'm just not enough of a hockey guy to come up with a diagnosis.
Well, I don't think they know. I don't think hockey guys know. I think this is one of the mysteries of sports. It's the crazy with two incredible teams and tangibles that are almost impossible.
How could you not know?
Well, I don't think anybody knows.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I think this is what it's all about. This is what makes sports exciting. When you have two evenly matched teams that are separated by a wafer thin.
But there's got to be a strategic move or a something that you can do that would allow things to flourish.
Dude, when you blindly shoot a puck and it goes off the pipe instead of in the twine, why? I don't know. Do you really know? Was Stone really that precise in his shot over Grubauer to get it with the millimeters of separation between what the net is and off the pipe? No, sometimes it's just separated by great teams and good luck or bad luck. So, hey, how about this? How about mitigating that? How about getting the lead? How about stepping on their throat? How about those moments?
Okay, there we go. Those are answers. I'll take those answers rather than no one knows. Ring the bell.
I ring it. What do you think, not about Deshaun Watson being with the possibly with the Broncos, but what do you think about Kareem Jackson, a player on a team with Drew Locke and Teddy Bridgewater, advocating that, boy, wouldn't that be great when he was on a podcast with Aqib Talib?
Do I think Teddy Bridgewater and Drew Lock know their status in the league? They know their hierarchy amongst the other quarterbacks? They do. But is it also dirty pool when your teammate advocates for another player at that position? Yes, both can be true. So while Drew Lock and Teddy Bridgewater recognize that, yeah, I'm clearly in the tier three, tier four of quarterbacks, where's your faith? Where's your confidence? What does this mean for me? Do you believe in me? Are you the only one who thinks this way about me? Do I have any real friends on this team? Mm. Those are the kind of things that go through guys' heads in those situations when someone publicly,
right.
It wasn't like an off-the-record conversation. It was a podcast with Aqib Talib. You knew there was going to be that kind of controversial question happening,
yeah.
And you played right into it. And if Kareem Jackson honestly feels that way, I give him credit for his honesty, but it doesn't help the team, nor does it help the locker room.
By the way, Aqib Talib, Catch and Fade podcast. Way to go, my man. Ring it, Kevin.
All right, coming up in Chicago next week, the College Football Playoff Management Committee will discuss considering expanding the current format from 4 teams to 12 teams. Immediate thoughts, feedback on that one.
I'm surprised by the number 12, I guess. The first 4 teams theoretically would get a bye, and then you chop it up from there. I think 12... I mean, I don't have a problem with it. I think 12 seems excessive. I don't think you need 12. I think 8 would do the trick. I was a little surprised to hear that the Power 5 conferences don't get an automatic bid. I mean, if you win a conference champion, this is my Pac-12 nervousness coming out here, by the way. But if you win a conference and you're not in the top 12 in the country, I guess that's a bit odd. But the Pac-12 was, would never surprise me, I guess. However, come on now. If you win the Pac-12, you're going to be in the top 12 teams of the country, right?
You would hope.
You would hope?
You would really hope.
Pac-12 football. Football after dark when nobody watches, except me and you.
Yeah.
Yeah, we love the Pac-12. But, okay, fine. You know, I of course, 4 is too little. I thought 8 would be the perfect number. 12 seems a bit excessive. But, okay, more is better than 4. However, I cannot get over the fact, I laugh at how comical it is that you expand things to make millions and you're still not seriously consider paying these athletes. I think that is a joke. So, you want to expand? Fine. Give me the specific details of how you are going to financially compensate these young athletes for generating millions of dollars for these institutions, Chad. That's how I feel.
I'm with you on the player compensation. I think if they expand to 12, fine. Will we see upsets? Very rarely. The top 3 or 4 teams in college football are miles better than the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th ranked team in college football. It's literally no contest. And if number 12 won't play number 1 unless they get to the first round because its first 4 teams will get a bye.
Right, 12-5, I guess.
Yes, but if number 12 plays number 5, it's going to be an epic beatdown.
It probably should be. Yeah, it probably will be.
And
yes, it's too much, right? Like, yeah, why 12?
I think you've taken it too far. You'll make money with it because we're football junkies in this country, but it will not be interesting nor compelling football, and they may have to, a few years down the road, try to pare it down when all these first-round games aren't very competitive.
You know what, Kevin, I'll do this on the air. Do us a favor. Find out the top 12 teams this past year, right? And so let's see what 5 versus 12, 6 versus 11 would have been.
Coastal Carolina's in the picture. You know what I mean? That does that.
Well, okay. But I'm not against a team like Coastal Carolina or, say, BYU.
Kevin, go back 2 years because this last year was a COVID year. Not every conference played the same number of games.
Thank you. Two years, 2019. All right, bring it. What do you think of the reports out of Green Bay, the breathless reports of Jordan Love just ripping it up? What do you think that's all about? And do you think that will have any impact on the Aaron Rodgers situation?
I think from an Aaron Rodgers perspective, he doesn't care. So ultimately, the person who gets to decide this is Aaron Rodgers. And it's not based on anything that Jordan Love does or doesn't do. So the Packers may be more willing to make a deal if Jordan Love looks good. But it's Aaron Rodgers who's driving this whole situation.
I actually love it. Keep pushing Aaron Rodgers away. I think what's going on, too, is they are trying in Green Bay to reassure the fan base, hey, everything's cool, we're all good, we did the right thing, because they're not firing Gutekunst, the GM. That's not happening, all right? And by the way, I don't know if it should happen. The guy did get his team to the NFC Championship game. I mean, as a GM, that's pretty good, right?
That's fantastic.
Now,
if along the way you mismanage the team's relationship with the most valuable player in the league, that's not good.
I agree. And drafting a quarterback in the 20s, by the way, that is on the
cover of your podcast.
That right this week is the mistake of quarterback in the 20s. And DMACC, a relentless life pursuing quarterbacks, available now at denverfan.com. You can dig into why it's such a disaster. And I had that theory long before the Packers did what they did. I just knew instantly it was a terrible mistake, which it's turned out to be. But I think this is a lot of PR going on right now, Chad. And the Packers are trying to shine up a turd. And I don't know if the Green Bay Packer fans are buying it. They may be, though. They're pretty simple out there with their cheddar heads. And they talk about green and gold glasses, you know, not objective, you know, wanting the best for their team, that sort of thing. That fan base will ditch Aaron Rodgers quickly. They will.
Ditch, but not forget.
Yeah, but they'll move on from him.
The pain will be temporary. They'll love him in 3 years. 5 years. They love Brett Favre.
Dude, you lived in Pittsburgh. I lived in Buffalo. We've been in these Rust Belt communities, and it's, you know, all of them are the same. It's all us against the world. We don't have that here in Denver, by the way. We don't have it the same way. We have our native bumper stickers, that sort of stuff. That's really nothing. By the way, we found out Pioneer plates, you had to have 4 generations. No, you just have to ask for them, and they give you. Listen, we live in a great place. No, nobody's saying we don't. Just look to the west a little bit, and you kind of get it. It's not that hard. But these places that suck to live in, trust me, the team matters more than an individual. Ring it, Kevin.
All right. Denver Broncos, Drew Locke. How do you build an offense around a quarterback who ranks last in 3-step drops, non-play action throws, throws against the blitz, and throws under pressure of any kind?
Well, you don't. That's why you bring in Teddy Bridgewater, and you should have drafted Justin Fields. I think if we're looking for any moment that defines the early part of George Payton's legacy here, it's when he turns to the room that is captured well on video. The Denver Broncos put it out there of him saying this was the safest pick. Patrick Surtain. The Patrick Surtain pick, me and my buddies playing fantasy football could have made. There was nothing to it. And you weren't fooling anybody by not interviewing him and all that sort of crap. That, talk about an old school dumb way to approach things. Holy cow. Oh my God, you fooled all of us. Yeah, you fooled all of us because you got 2 free agents as cornerbacks. What an okie doke. Well, now what do you do with Michael Ojemudia? I get it, you can never have too many cornerbacks, right, Vic? Yeah, you can never have too many quarterbacks that are good. So you weren't fooling. It was just, hey man, listen, George Payton, it was his first draft on his own.
Yeah.
It's just, at the end of the day, it got to be a little much. He did some other interesting things. I mean, you're moving up to take a running back in the second round. You're moving up to take a guy who's blocking a tree out in the forest of Canada. You're moving up to make these moves. I mean, you could have drafted Justin Fields. You could have got a cornerback in the second round. And you could have got Quinn Meinerz later. You could have got Trey Sermon in the third round, who's pretty good. You know, there's other things you could have done. But yet you froze when the moment mattered the most. And then you got all active later on to do things you didn't have to do.
Whoa. Froze? It's his first draft. Your first draft, you're going to come out riverboat gambler, or you're gonna play it safe? You're going to go with the doctor stuff. Do no harm. He took the Hippocratic Oath. Do no harm. I didn't make this team worse. If I go with Justin Fields and Justin Fields sucks, I've made this team worse.
Hey, no problem. You made the safest pick. I'm just telling you, anybody could have done that. There was nothing that interesting about it.
No.
I mean,
do no harm.
Okay, that's it. That defines who you are right now.
Mm-hmm.
You go in the safest direction. You waited until Teddy Bridgewater was the lowest bargain basement price to get him.
Yep.
But you know what? All right, hey, let's see how it all turns out.
We won't beat people. We'll just avoid pain playing bad football.
Bring it. I mean, you did go to the Super Bowl with Neil O'Donnell.
Yeah.
It did happen. You
we won't
lost.
Beat people. If we just avoid playing bad football, we'll win games.
Bill Belichick, I've been around Bill Belichick a lot, not as much as you, obviously. But in terms of being lucky enough to cover Super Bowls, it just me, Belichick, Brady, Gronkowski.
All the time.
Been around each other. And so I've seen Belichick, and I've, you know, just because the Broncos have played the Patriots so many times, conference calls, press conferences, I have not been around another opposing coach as much as Bill Belichick, aside from anybody working with the Broncos. A reporter asked him at a Super Bowl, and it's really interesting watching Belichick at the Super Bowl because he will have perspective when he answers questions at the Super Bowl where he'll only talk about the next game in front of him at the, week-to-week basis. Asked about developing a team, he said there's many ways to go about it, and you need different guys for different situations, and for every problem, there's three or four solutions. So is going safe a possible answer to a problem? Yeah, yes, you can win like that. But there's so many other things, in my opinion, that have to go your way. I would always, when it comes to taking a chance on a quarterback, take a chance. And I don't even think it's that much of a chance. You're picking a quarterback in the top 10. That's Justin Fields. I mean, is that really that big of a risk?
Your life philosophy is the, relentless pursuit of a quarterback.
There you go.
It's a whole different life outlook.
It's a whole thing. Well, let's get a preview of tonight's matchup in Las Vegas. We go to Scott Masters, our Avs insider, on the Johnson Auto Plaza hotline. Hey, Scott, bring us up with the news today of Bednar and what he was going through with COVID testing.
Yeah, I think that's just the world of COVID and what the players and coaches go through every day. I think it was just one test showed up a little, I don't know if there's a little bit of a lot negative, but I believe it was negative. They tested him again. He's been cleared for tonight's game from all reports. So I think it was just a little scare. And I think that happens from time to time in professional sports, but from what all we know, he's good to go and the team's ready to go.
Are you anticipating any changes on any of the lines?
No. I haven't seen any changes. I think the warm-ups were the same. I think they had a partial game skate today, meaning not all players were out there. So it's hard to tell at that time. I don't see any difference. I think, the Avs played pretty well in game five, I should say, to warrant keeping the same changes. So I expect the same lineup tonight.
All right, Scott, before the three losses in a row to the Sharks, the Avs won 14 out of 15, 11 in a row. What's happened since then?
Yeah, I see it as the Avalanche were so good in the first round. I think a combination of the Avs were so good and the competition level was not very good. I thought St. Louis didn't play a very good game at all in all four games. Maybe the first game they played okay. But I think fans and the Avalanche themselves got a little overconfident, and then winning game one at 7-1, you're like, whoa, we're really good. Pulling out game two, wow, we're 6-0. And then I think in game two, at some point, they got punched in the nose, and I think that hurt. I think they're like, whoa, this team is good. This Vegas team is good. And they didn't play a great game in game two. Obviously, they didn't play a good game in game three, game four. And there weren't even games. They were pretty much dominated in those three games. So that's the problem with what I see with the Avalanche. It's not that they're losing three in a row. It's the fact of how they lost. I mean, game five, obviously the Avalanche played well, but it's been scary at times, that three game stretch, on how close it was not. So I think the Avalanche have their hands full to win two in a row, but we'll see if they have it and tonight.
The Avalanche will win tonight if blank.
If they out-compete Vegas. It's all about competition right now for me. Vegas is skilled. Vegas has some deeper lines in the top two that can score. You look at Mark Trussell scored a hat trick on their second line. Their second line center, Carlson, has scored 42 goals at one point in their career just 3 years ago. So Avalanche have to compete. They did compete in game five. They were good. They need to continue to compete if they want to win this series. And you guys were talking about bad timing. I don't necessarily that's true. I think Vegas and Colorado are the two top teams in the West, and I think whoever wins will beat the Blue Blanc and Rouge in Game 3, even though I have ties to them a little bit, but in Series 3. But I think Tampa will win in the end, so I don't think it's necessarily bad timing it happens. I think if Nuggets beat Lakers last year in the Western Finals, they win the Finals. And nice. I remember in 2012, we lost to the St. Louis. I was with the St. Louis Blues. We lost to the L.A. Kings, who went on to dominate the Western Finals and dominate the Finals. So sometimes it's just how the dice rolls and who you get in your matchups, and you just have to win all four series. You just can't win two.
All right, so in your experience in the NHL and hockey, a lifetime in hockey, the difference between a team that is of a championship caliber and the team that isn't is essentially what?
How they come together at the right time. And that is a little bit lucky, but that's a little bit of luck and a little bit of how your team is composed of, like, and how they've been built over the years. It's really hard for me to see the Avalanche winning last year because of the lack of experience. And this year, I think the lack of experience overall is showing in the series just based on the defense alone. Like, we look at the Avalanche defense, I think they had 200 career playoff games versus Vegas is 600. So it's a little bit of these players of Vegas have been there. They lost in the finals. They've know what it takes. And I think the Avalanche are really, really good. They're obviously one of the best teams in the league, but their skill has won them a lot of games in the regular season. Now they need to find that next level of what championship teams do. And you look at the Broncos first winning the Super Bowl, not the first, but when they won all three games on the road and they just came together and they were unstoppable at that point because of how they were being built and how they were being treating each other and how they were just competing as one. And I think that's what's the difference right now for the Avalanche.
Avalanche, win or lose tonight, Scott? What is it?
I think the winner is Vegas tonight, 5-2. But if Avalanche win, they win the series. Right. I think they come home and they win the series, and then they go on to the finals, which is a huge – this is why this game is so big, right?
Yep.
You're talking about Western finals and then the finals, so that's it's right. A huge game.
Thank you, Scott. We love your coverage. Scott Masters on the Johnson Auto Plaza Hotline, and that sets us up. I'll kill you with truth about tonight's game next.
Does your company make safety a top priority? Alliance Safety, Colorado's premier supplier of safety equipment, is here to help make it one. As an authorized distributor of 3M safety products and home to all pro gear, Alliance has a vast inventory of personal protective equipment designed to keep your workers safe, including fall protection, safety glasses, protective gloves, and gas detection solutions. Visit AllianceSafetyInc.net. Call 303-388-8766 or stop by the Alliance Safety Warehouse off I-70 and Tower today to lock up all your safety needs.
I'm just an old truth teller.
It's time for D-Mac to kill you with truth.
I want the truth!
Tell the truth!
And the truth shall set you free!
Here on The Drive.
The truth is, losing tonight, if you're the Avalanche, will stink. At this point, it doesn't even sting for the Nuggets. I mean, really, seriously, it looks like some sort of Bad News Bears sort of movie. So, kind of, who cares? We all know, with Michael Porter Jr. being healthy, Jamal Murray coming back, the MVP and Jokic, Michael Malone, who's a great coach. We all know the promising 2 to 3 year future for the Nuggets is solid. Here's the truth. As painful as tonight may be, if the Avalanche do lose, The truth is, Nathan MacKinnon, who's nominated for the Hart, which is the MVP of the NHL, we'll see if he wins that. Cale Makar, who got nominated for the Norris, one of the three best defensemen in the league, according to the award givers of the NHL. Even Landeskog, who's been around forever, Grubauer. I know there's contracts that got to be get done. The truth is, you still have a great team with plenty of time to go. It'll just be more painful than anything. The truth is, the Avalanche likely, even if they lose tonight, will likely be in this same situation next year as well. The quirky question is, do they need to lose this series to make the jump the next year? It was acquiring Ray Bourque and losing that happened to the Avs before they could win in 2001. So the truth is, as much as it would suck to lose tonight, I'm not giving up on hope on the Avalanche nor the Nuggets. We're just experiencing like the most painful sports week imaginable here in Denver because both of our teams are kind of crapping the bed at the same time and it sucks. So it's not end of days. It's not nuclear. It's all right. It just stinks and it stings. The difference is the Nuggets are, listen, let's keep it real. Let's give you the truth. They're a bit of a distance from a championship team. They are. The Avalanche aren't. The Avalanche win tonight. They win the Stanley Cup. They lose tonight. They could win the Stanley Cup next year. So take it for what it's worth. Root with all your heart and soul. But tomorrow, if we come up snake eyes in Vegas, it's not the end of the road. It could be the beginning of an incredible championship run. And that's the truth. Chad?
I agree with your truth right there. If they lose tonight, lose four in a row, this is that galvanizing moment. This is whenever the team is lagging next year, Bednar, all he has to say is sharks. You know, maybe there's a picture of a shark somewhere in the locker room or in the weight room. It's one of those things where they are constantly
knights,
reminded.
Knights?
Huh?
Sharks or knights?
Sharks, right?
Knights.
Knights.
I got to correct you on that one.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate
point,
it.
That point being said,
yes,
whatever.
It's the knights. Absolutely. Knights. So.
I wanted to let it go. I wanted to let it go.
No, but when I went to it the third time, you had to say something. I appreciate you. I completely appreciate you. So, yeah, this is that galvanizing kind of thing of you are on a roll. You somehow you lost the thread. Let's never lose that again. We can't allow ourselves to be in this situation again. Next year, they come together in a way and they point back to this series next season continually in tough moments and use it as an inspirational moment.
Yep. This stinks. It's tough to go through as a fan.
But you have to, I think as a fan, you have to realize.
Then again, you win tonight, you should win the Stanley Cup.
Sometimes you got to knock on the door before it opens for you. You don't always just don't walk in and just kick the door down and impose your will on people. You yourself have to learn how to play at that level and to continue to play at that level. You did it two games. Can you close it out?
Oh, they could have easily done it in game five. Should have. 2-0 into the third. More or less, dominating play enough that they could have won. And a flurry of activity on Flurry at the beginning of overtime, and then just a bounce didn't go that way. And like a stone, buries one, and it was like a gut punch. It was like you're shocked to just, whoa. Like it really was hard to believe that that had just happened. I guess I'm great. I am definitely grateful, though. We've had these two amazing teams to watch and talk about and have fun with this whole spring of COVID where things are finally getting back to normal. What, you want to point to the Rockies?
Well, I'm saying it's nice because look at what's happening with the Rockies. That was my point there.
Yeah, I know. I'm still a baseball fan. I'll just be honest. I have had some troll moments. I just cannot help myself. I shouldn't do it, I guess. I shouldn't troll people. Oh, I mean, I clearly troll people by giving Rockies updates in the middle of the Avalanche and the Nuggets games.
Okay. Well, give the update on this one then.
Yeah, they're losing 6-0 to the Marlins in the bottom of the fifth. And by the way, in Miami, that's not a COVID situation.
No, that's...
They just hate baseball in Miami.
I don't even understand why. It's an amazing Latin community in Miami, clearly. You would think...
Doesn't matter. Ballpark's in a beautiful ballpark.
Yeah, but it's terrible.
It's a lousy location.
Yep.
And there's too many transplants. And nobody cares. It's kind of a shame. I mean, Jeter's put some good teams there. They can't keep anybody. They have a female GM, first female GM in Major League Baseball history. There's a lot of really cool, interesting things with the Miami Marlins. Just nobody cares. They should not have a franchise.
How many teams in baseball are in that same situation?
Like the Marlins?
Yeah.
Nobody. They're it.
They're the
where the community is that apathetic?
Yes.
They're it.
Anyone close?
Tampa maybe, but Tampa's had teams like in the World Series. Although the Marlins have won 2 World Series.
Right.
I mean, people show up once you're in the World Series. That's that apathetic. I mean, maybe Tampa's after that. After that, nobody. I mean, it's ridiculous. As bad as the Rockies are and, you know, are putting their fans through the mill, it's nothing like that. People still love the Rockies.
I think they're apathetic about the Rockies winning and losing, but they still love the Rockies.
They love the Rockies.
The idea of going to a game is fantastic.
Fun. Yeah. By the way, have you been downtown? Have you seen McGregor Square?
I have not.
Dude, even if you hate baseball, seriously, you want to have fun date night? You just go down to McGregor Square, go to a game, do a little bar hop and whatever. There's a hotel right there, the Rally, I think, hotel. Beautiful. Twist my arm, you know, go to a great city downtown where everything is located near the ballpark. And you haven't been to see the Braves where the Braves play. They play out in the suburbs now. They don't play in downtown Atlanta. But what they did is they put everything infrastructure-wise right at the ballpark. Hotel, restaurants, entertainment district, clubs, all that stuff. They literally just built. They didn't just build the ballpark, which is sensational, by the way. They built everything else around it.
It's so smart.
It's absolutely the formula for how everybody should organize any venue for a sports team. It's the biggest problem the Broncos actually have right now is they made such a mistake. Not a mistake having the ball the field downtown, but they put it right next to Mile High. I mean, it was short-sighted at best. And it's practically impossible to build.
There's no room.
Other stuff down there, to the degree. And it's funny when you go out to the airport. If you go off 470, for example, you see the Gaylord Hotel. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you really just pay attention next time you happen to be out in that area. Just note the thousands of acres that are open, and there's this kind of incredible hotel that's kind of standing in the middle of nowhere. Well, duh. Well, what do you think it should be? Of course, there should be a stadium right there and business around there and light rail right there and, you know, probably closer to the airport, which would be better. It's not that far from downtown. You know, if you're out there, you'd be, what, 15 minutes from downtown? It's not that big of a deal. I, of course, would prefer everything to be downtown. But they built this ballpark out in Atlanta, Chad. It's sensational. It's not downtown, and people love going there. People go to the ballpark in Atlanta, Chad, when there's no game going on. They just go there.
Same thing in New England.
And McGregor Square will do the same thing, yeah, by the way, for Lodo.
Mm-hmm.
So you can hate on the Rockies and hate on all that stuff, but they did something. I know, sucks to say, they did something smart. Team probably stinks, but
business-wise,
a whole nother issue. Let's go, Avs. Let's get it done. Oh, speaking of baseball, yeah, we'll get you an update with what's going on. Spilly, we had a good conversation with Spilly, too, and questions about Trevor Story, we'll answer them coming up.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive. Here's Tyler Palumbus and D-Mac.
plans to get going here in a little bit. Chad Brown in for Tyler Palumbus. And the Rockies are getting waxed right now. 8-0. Top of the sixth. Connor Joe, who just got called back up. Matt Adams is on, got injured. So Connor Joe back up. He grounds out. Okay. There you go, Chad. I could bore you to tears. But the big question is about Trevor Story. Now, earlier, I spoke with Ryan Spielborgs, courtesy of Bet Rivers Sportsbook, our fan Rockies analyst and gaucho from the University of California, Santa Barbara. Pretty nice school. Literally sand in the parking lot of the campus.
Mm-hmm.
How many schools have that? And we went into depth on the big issues with baseball, with the sticky stuff on the baseballs and how that's impacting things and all that. So if you want to go deeper into that, it was a great conversation. Spilly's awesome. You can find that at denverfan.com. Just look for it. You'll find it. No problem. In terms of just getting us updated with Trevor's story, here's what Spilly had to say.
Story's back. Alan Trejo goes back to Albuquerque. So there's your news and notes for today. I think it's important, though, for Story because I think there's going to be so much swirling around him in the next couple months, especially with trade rumors. And is there an extension there? Will he be a Rocky at the end of this year? I mean, all these different things. You need him to be healthy, first and foremost. So I want to see him healthy, kind of like an elbow stinger he got when he made a crazy play up the middle in New York. So I don't think it's going to impact him much. But, you know, when we've watched him over the last couple months, he has not got locked in yet. So I'd like to see him get locked in and see where he goes.
And I asked Billy, where is Story going to be by mid-July?
I think there's a couple things going against him to get traded. So, you know, Bill Schmidt's in a really difficult position as an interim GM to make that kind of trade, but he's also focused on the hammer. So you got kind of like a double whammy where the focus for the front office is going to be draft and what pieces and parts can you get for some of your movable players. You know, Daniel Bard's one, John Gray certainly is one. I think Ramon Marquez probably brings you back the biggest return if you're willing to go there. Michael Givens as well. So you got five or six players that can make a big difference from an organizational standpoint as far as return, but I'm not 100% confident in the current state of affairs right now that I believe that the Rockies would make those decisions. My gut feeling right now is that I would expect to see Trevor still in the Rockies and work on an extension in the offseason. If you don't, you get a compensation bid.
Hear more with Spilly, our fan Rockies analyst, courtesy of Bed River Sportsbook at denverfan.com. Just click on the interviews tab, and we go into deeper conversation about what's happening with spin rate and the kind of some analytic stuff and more about Trevor Story and where this team's going to be here in a little bit. Tonight they are losing and losing badly, 8-0 to the Marlins. They won yesterday, so yeah, on to the Reds after this one. But everybody is obviously caught up in the excitement that is the Avalanche trying to move past the Nuggets from last night. So Chad, here we go. What are your expectations tonight for the Avs?
I think they'll certainly show up. I think they'll certainly, you know, give a great effort. But I think it's, at this point, the wheels have fallen off a little bit. You know, you had that great run at the end of the season. You swept the first round. You got that confidence up the first two games against the Knights. And now you found a way to lose three in a row. That's a difficult track to jump back on. I think they show up, they compete, they play hard, but in the end, the Knights find a way to win.
Oh, man. Well, you think that? Scott Masters thinks that? You know, it was killing me yesterday to actually pick the Suns. I just did not know how the Nuggets were going to adjust to Chris Paul after game one. That, to me, is what looked different than, you know, a game one misstep against the Blazers. It just was like, we've seen this before with the Blazers. This, you know, they're not going to stay that hot. What I saw out of Chris Paul in game one, I just was dazzled by, and he continued to dazzle. I see how the Avs can beat the Knights.
I can see it too.
This isn't some sort of crazy mystery or unsolvable riddle. I get how they can win. So the question for me tonight is, are they a championship team or not? I know the Nuggets aren't a championship team. Not yet. Maybe next year. Jay Williams thinks so from ESPN. He thinks they get a healthy Murray back and Michael Porter Jr., a little, you know, experience under his belt, and Jokic at 26 as an MVP. He thinks they win it next year. I'm going with my heart and my head. I do think this is the moment for the Avalanche. I'm hesitating on it because there's certainly reasons for doubt. But if you're a championship team like the Avalanche were in 2001, down 3-2, and they go into that crap barn in the Meadowlands, and they pull out a shutout victory over the Devils and then cinch Game 7 to win the Cup 20 years ago, Chad, I think we've arrived at that moment as well. Avs win tonight, 3-0. They're up 2-0. They hang on to it, and they get an empty netter. So 3-0. McKinnon does get one of the goals, and Grubauer has a moment that will justify him winning the Vezina, and will justify Makar winning the Norris, and will justify McKinnon winning the Hart. Huh? Who's with me?
It sounds fantastic, but as Scott pointed out, the Knights have 3 times the amount of playoff experience that the Avs have.
You know, I was on a great way to finish things up right there, Chad, and you took the moment and you just, Chad,
it's going to be a moment tonight.
You're just reminding everybody you're a Patriot. Why don't you stop?
It's going to be a moment tonight. Either they're going to win and win it all, or this will be the moment that will galvanize them for next year. It's going to be a moment tonight.
Either way, the moment starts in moments. Nick and Cecil up next, right here on The Fan.